Crispin here on the North Shore Vineyard Church audio podcast. Today on the podcast, we have part 10 of our series on the Gospel of John. This message is entitled, Breaking Through the Barriers. In this message, we're looking at the story of Jesus and the Samaritan woman at the well. This message is given by Penny Murray, who is a part of our teaching team at North Shore Vineyard, and this is her first message at our church. So you're in for a real treat. Some really good stuff here. Well, we're going to go ahead and head to the talk. So let's join North Shore Vineyard in downtown Covington. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to check back with us on the web at northshorevineyard.org.
My husband Brian and I and our two kids, we've been part of the community here at North Shore Vineyard since this past summer. And just, I can't even begin to say what the relationships mean that we've built here. I said this last time and you just get emotional, but we love being here. We love being a part of what God is doing at the Vineyard. And I'm just really excited to get to do this morning. So if it's your first time here, we've been working through the book of John as a community since November. So today we're going to be at John chapter 4, verse 1, and we're going to be looking at verses 1 through 27. It's this great passage. It's a conversation between Jesus and the Samaritan woman. So instead of me reading the passage, I wanted us to watch this video. Now would be good.
In Samaria, he came to a town named Sychar, which was not far from the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired out by the trip, sat down by the well. It was about noon. A Samaritan woman came to draw some water.
Give me a drink of water.
His disciples had gone into town to buy food.
You're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan. So how can you ask me for a drink?
Jews will not use the same cups and bowls that Samaritans use.
If you only knew what God gives, and who it is that is asking you for a drink, you would ask him. And he would give you a life-giving water.
Sir, you don't have a bucket and the well is deep. Where would you get that life-giving water? It was our ancestor Jacob who gave us this well. He and his children and his flocks all drank from it. You don't claim to be greater than Jacob, do you?
Those who drink this water will get thirsty again. But those who drink the water that I will give them will never be thirsty again. The water that I will give them will become in them a spring, which will provide them with life-giving water and give them eternal life.
Sir, give me that water. Then I will never be thirsty again. Nor will I have to come here to draw water.
Go and call your husband and come back.
I don't have a husband.
You are right when you say you don't have a husband. You have been married to 5 men, and the man you live with now is not really your husband. You have told me the truth.
You are a prophet, sir. My Samaritan ancestors worshipped God on this mountain. But you Jews say that Jerusalem is the place where we should worship God.
You Samaritans do not really know whom you worship. But we Jews know whom we worship because it is from the Jews that salvation comes. But the time is coming. And is already here. When by the power of God's Spirit, people will worship the Father as he really is, offering him the true worship that he wants. God is spirit, and only by the power of his spirit can people worship him as he really is.
I know that the Messiah will come. And when he comes, he will tell us everything.
I am he. I who am talking with you.
After spending 2 days there...
Okay. So, we just watched this conversation between Jesus and this woman. But what can be really easy for us to miss as modern-day hearers of John's gospel is that this conversation, well, it was actually very scandalous. Now, John's original audience, they would have picked up on this. They would have seen just how shocking this story is. So why did John decide that this was important enough to include in his telling of the gospel? I mean, what about it was so compelling for him that this just had to be told? And why would anyone think that it was scandalous? Well, John, he tells us early on in his gospel that if you want to know what God is like, you look at Jesus. And what we see Jesus doing here is he is overcoming all the barriers that separate us from each other and us from God. And he's doing it to show this woman the boundary transcending love of God. And guys, that's worth talking about. That's worth including in a story. So we're going to start today by taking a look at some of these barriers that he overcomes to connect with this woman. Now, the first barrier that we see come up in this passage is the barrier of race and nationality. More specifically, the barrier that was in place between Jews and Assyrians. So we're going to start with a map. This is a map of Israel at the time of Jesus' ministry. And Israel was made up of three regions. So down here to the south, don't you love the mouse work? This is the region of Judea. This is where Jerusalem was located, and the temple was located there in Jerusalem. So this is a really important region for Jews. This is where everything's happening. This is where they go to worship. This is where their festivals take place. This is an important region. So that's Judea. Now, up at the very top, the north, we have the region of Galilee. This was Jesus' home region. It's where he's from. It's where he grew up. And this region was also heavily populated with Jewish people. Now, the region that we're really interested in today, that's the one right there in the center. It's in between Judea and Galilee, and that's the region of Samaria. Now, the Samaritan people, they were the offspring of Jews and Assyrians that had intermarried. Now, way before Jesus, 700 years back, the Assyrians, they're the enemies of Israel. They come in, they conquer the northern kingdoms, and they bring the people out into exile. But what they did also was they took some of their own people, Assyrians, and they brought them into this area. So that's where we get this whole Assyrians and Jews that intermarried, and we fast forward 700 years, and here we are talking about the Samaritan people. Now, the Jews, they looked at these Samaritans, and they were like, oh, you guys, you're foreigners, and you're in our land. And they would say, Samaritans? Yeah, you are impure half-breeds because you're of a mixed race. And then, of course, the religious practices. Oh, you're idolaters for the things that you do. So the Jews, they feel this racial, religious, and social superiority to the Samaritans. And there's this very long and complicated history between these two groups with acts of violence and hostility going back and forth on both sides. Now, John, he points out in verse 9, he says, Jews would have nothing to do with Samaritans. The video, it uses a different translation that says that a Jew, they wouldn't use the cup or a dish that a Samaritan had used because these things would be considered ceremonially unclean at this point. Now, also at this time, there was this Jewish saying, and it went like this, you would say, may I never set eyes on a Samaritan, and may I never be thrown into company with one. And some Jews, they felt so strongly about this that if they were on the same journey as Jesus and they were trying to travel from the southern region of Judea up to the north, they would actually travel completely around the region of Samaria. I guess this is a big deal. They're not driving around in minivans. They're walking. In Israel, it's tiny, but still, this is going to double the distance, and it's going to add at least a day or two to their journey. But what What do we see with Jesus? Well, first, we see he doesn't avoid this region. He goes through the region of Samaria in his travel. He's not avoiding contact with the Samaritan people. When this woman, the Samaritan woman, when she approaches where Jesus is at, he doesn't get up and walk away. No, he speaks with her. And it's more than that. He's actually engaging her in a conversation. And he even asks her for a drink from that Samaritan bucket. Before the end of this chapter, we see Jesus has decided he's going to stay here. I mean, he stays an extra 2 days. He's hanging out with these people. He's building relationships with Samaritans. What we're seeing in this passage is that this new thing that God is doing through Jesus, it's for everyone. And guys, when it comes to Samaritans, this would be seen as scandalous. Now, the second barrier that we see Jesus coming up against in this passage is the barrier in place between men and women. Now, it's a different time, it's a different culture, and it's very different from our own. So it can be hard to relate to this. But the position of women at this time, well, in some ways it was similar to what we see of women in the Middle East today. Women were considered unclean a good bit of the time, and they were looked at as being a temptation for men. So, especially in public life, separation between men and women was to be avoided, and this was especially true for religious leaders, the Jewish rabbis. They were going to be very careful not to appear to be doing anything inappropriate, so they wouldn't even speak with a woman out on a public street. And we're talking about your own mother, your own sister, even your own daughter or wife. You wouldn't want to be seen speaking with them. There's this one group of religious Jews. They were called the bleeding and the bruised Pharisees. Now, Crispin, he talked about the Pharisees a little last week, and we heard about how they just love rules, and then they love making up new rules, and then, hey, let's make up some more, and let's follow them, because that's great. That's what makes us holy. So these guys, they get together, and at some point they decide, well, you know, we're not going to speak to women, of course. We're not even going to look at them. So if we see a woman, oh, we're going to cover our eyes as we go down the street. And apparently they must have bumped into a lot of things to get a name like bleeding and bruised Pharisees. But even Jesus' disciples, we see in verse 27, they've gone, they've gotten food, they're walking back to where Jesus is, and whoa, is that Jesus? Is he talking with a woman? Guys, they're floored. This is just not how Jewish rabbis behave. But with Jesus, we see his approach to women. It's in such contrast to his culture. We see a deliberate modeling of a whole new way of relating to women. And it's not just in this passage. This is all throughout the Gospels. We find Jesus speaking with women. We find him answering their questions. We find him challenging them. And he sees them as unique and valuable individuals. And he invites them to be a part of his ministry. And here is Jesus, not just with a woman, but a Samaritan woman. He's here, and he's more concerned about connecting with her and meeting her needs and inviting her to be a part of what God is doing. He's more concerned about this than he's worried about appearing holy or worried what somebody else might think of him. Now, the third barrier that comes up in this passage is the barrier of religion. Now, the Jews and the Samaritans, they had in many ways rival religions because they both felt, well, you know, my group, we're the real chosen people of God. And that's how they saw themselves. Now, what I find more interesting than the things they didn't have in common is actually what they did. The Samaritans, they had a loyalty to the first 5 books of the law, the same 5 books of the Hebrew Bible. They kept the Sabbath. They followed circumcision. They celebrated many of the same religious festivals as the Jews. And they had this sense of being chosen people and had a very strong attachment to the land God had given the Israelites. Even today, there are Samaritans, and you can go and you can speak with one, and they'll tell you, we are directly descended from the northern tribes of Israel, and we consider ourselves Israelites. Now, even in this passage, we see they're awaiting the Messiah. Now, One of the major core issues of separation between these two groups is that you have the Jews, and they worship here in Jerusalem in the temple, and then you've got the Samaritans. They've got their own rival line of priests. They've got their own practices and beliefs, and they worship at the sanctuary of their holy mountain. Now, this woman, I mean, we see she's aware. Jesus has crossed that line between Samaritans and Jews, and he's crossed this line between men and women. What about religion? So she gets to the core question of what has separated Jews and Samaritans for centuries. She says in verse 20, "Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews, you claim the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem." Now here's the thing. Jewish men at this time, they would wake up every day and they would pray this prayer. They would say, "Blessed art thou, O Lord God, for not making me a slave, a Gentile, or a woman." They would pray this because slaves and Gentiles, who the Samaritans would be considered a part of, and women, they couldn't participate fully in the community of faith. They had restricted areas, and you can only go this far, and you can only participate in these activities. And then you begin to feel like you've got restricted access to God at that point. That's what this woman is hitting on. So what does Jesus think about all these boundaries and barriers and all these restrictions? Well, he tells her, this isn't what God is looking at. He says in verse 21, he says, "Believe me, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in the temple in Jerusalem." In 23, he says, "Yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for they are the kind of worshipers that the Father seeks." What's happening here is that we're learning God, he's not regulated over here on this mountain. And he's not locked up over here in a building, and you don't need someone else to intercede to God on your behalf. God isn't asking us to jump through religious hoop after religious hoop and hope that we can somehow fight our way to him. What is going on is the divine is putting on flesh and blood, and he's entering into our world to connect with us. God is breaking through all these barriers to reach us, and he does it to give us his spirit. And it's this very spirit of God that comes into our lives and our communities, and it allows us to worship him as he really is. That's what he's looking for. He's looking not at the hoops we jump through. He's looking at our hearts. And this is for everyone. Any of us can get in on this. Paul, he talks about this in Galatians. He takes that same Jewish prayer, and he just turns it around. He says in 3:28, "There's neither Jew nor Gentile. There's neither slave nor free. There's neither male nor female. You guys, you are all one in Christ Jesus." What's happening through Jesus is God, he's destroying the barriers of religion, and he is creating peace between us and between himself. And then he gives us his spirit to come into our lives and transform us and allow us to live authentic lives of worship. Anyone, anywhere can get in on this. So we see Jesus bypassing all these rules and regulations and boundaries just to have this conversation with this woman. And then he offers her a gift. And he calls this gift living water. He says in verse 10, he says, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, well, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." And then in 13, he tells her, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But those who drink the water I give them, they will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life." Well, the woman, she's listening. but she's a bit confused because the word for living water, you could also translate that to mean running water. So she's there, Jacob's well, she's got her bucket, she's on her mission for the day, and she's thinking of physical water. So she looks at him and says, "Oh yeah, yeah, I'll take some of your water. Coming to this well every day, oh, it's a pain. I'd love not to have to come to the well. Sure." But of course we know Jesus is not really talking about physical water. So she's listening, she's responding, but they're just not on the same page because Jesus, he's using water as a metaphor to point to something, not to physical water, but to the deepest, most inner thirst of her heart. But they're just not there yet. They're not on the same page. So he does something a little unexpected. He changes tactics and he says, "Hey, why don't you go and get your husband and you come back?" Ooh, she has to go, "Oh man, I can't do that because I don't have a husband." And he says, "Yeah, you're right. You don't have a husband. The fact is you've had five. And the man you're with now, he's not your husband. So yeah, what you say is true." And that's all they say about that. Feels kind of awkward, doesn't it? Like, what? Why? Why'd you go there? Well, this is the thing. What he's doing, he's letting her know, "Hey, I know your story. And it's a story he couldn't possibly know as a stranger. He has seen what has marked her life. He knows of her pain and her experiences. This woman who goes to the well in the heat of the noonday sun when nobody else would normally be there. Because all the other women of the community, it would have been a social thing. They would have gone together in the morning hours. And yet she goes alone. Jesus has seen her brokenness, her shame. He has seen her isolation. And he has seen her plight of dependence. So when Jesus, when he speaks of her past, she knows. She's in the presence of a prophet. And all through this conversation, he's made it clear. He sees her. She exists for him. She has value and worth and significance and potential. And her story, it's not over yet. And here we see Jesus revealing himself to be the Messiah to this woman, the Samaritan woman. This is the first time in the Gospel of John that Jesus just comes out and tells somebody this. And it's to her. And he's here offering her something. He's offering her a gift. And it's of incomparable worth. What he's doing is he's saying, "I know your deepest need. I know your deepest longing. And it's not this bucket of water." He's pointing her to the deepest, most inner thirst of her heart. Now here's where we stop just reading a story. We actually want to enter into it ourselves. And we want to allow Jesus to turn to us and say, "Do you realize you're thirsty? Do we recognize our own inner thirst? Because we're not any different from this woman with her bucket at a well going about her day in the first century. At our very core, all of us, man, all of humanity, we share this same inner thirst. And that is a thirst for deep, intimate connection. It's a thirst for a life of meaning and significance. And it is a thirst for joy and for peace that transcends any of our past and any of the circumstances that we find ourselves in. Do we realize that we're thirsty?" The prophet Jeremiah, he talks about this living water way before Jesus, way back in the Old Testament. He says in Jeremiah 2:13, he speaks for God and he says this. He says, "My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and they've dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water." Now, when I think about my own life, oh man, very quickly, I can think of all these ways and all these areas that I've looked to meet this deep thirst. I mean, college. You go off to college and you think, oh yeah, that's where I'm going to figure everything out. That's where I'm going to find myself and discover who I am. That's where I'm going to find my identity. Or through our relationships. When I met Brian and I fell in love with him and we got married, oh, it was so easy to look to him and think, you're somehow going to meet this need for deep, intimate connection. You're going to give me value. Or through our careers. I mean, what's the first thing people ask you at a party? They say, oh, well, what do you do? So very quickly, we can begin to think that that's who we are. If we can just find the right job, we'll be important, we'll be valuable, we'll have identity, then we'll have a life of meaning and purpose. Or through things like goals, accomplishments, success, through our possessions, we can start to look to these things and think they're going to bring us that inner joy and that inner peace that we all long for. And if I'm being honest, I've looked to church to somehow quench this thirst. If I could just find, you know, that perfect church with the perfect group of people, and if we could just hammer out the right statement of belief, well, then everything, I'd be great. We'd be on the right track, and I wouldn't feel empty. Now, all these things, all these areas of our lives, our family, our jobs, our education, our goals, our possessions, success, these aren't bad things. These are great things. They're important even. God is concerned about these things. They're not the problem. The problem is when we look to them and we expect these things to quench our inner thirst. Because the problem is they just can't. They're not capable. We're asking them to give us something they're just not able to give. Because they're broken wells when it comes to meeting this deep inner thirst that we all share. Because I look around the room and I think of stories and conversations that I've had with people here. Man, I know life doesn't always turn out the way we think it should. We've all experienced loss that we didn't expect. We've all experienced disappointment. Life just doesn't always work out the way we think it would. I'm sure the Samaritan woman, she wasn't expecting to find herself with 5 husbands and now in a state of dependence on some guy she's not married to. So when we look to all these things in our lives to meet this need, we're going to be left feeling thirsty. Because what God's offering, it's a connection with himself. And it's through this connection that we find identity. It's through this connection that we find that life of meaning that we're looking for, where we find the joy and the peace that we most long for. But we have to stop. We have to just become aware that we're even thirsty. Gosh, we become so distracted with all the things in our life. We have to sit with this. It feels painful, feeling thirsty. This is not comfortable. So the first thing we're going to do, we're going to start looking for a substitute. We're going to start looking for something in our lives to fill this need. But what Jesus is offering is not a well. He's not handing out shovels and telling you to go pick a spot. Now dig. Let's hope you find what you're looking for. And oh, let's hope that well doesn't dry up then. What Jesus is offering, it's a spring. It's moving and living and vibrant and fresh and abundant. And it's from him. Guys, this is effortless on our part. This isn't us. And we start to trust in this. Trust in God's goodness, in his grace, in his gift, in his love for all of us. And then that living water, which is the very Spirit of God, comes into our lives and then it wells up. And it flows out into all those other areas and into the people we come into contact with. I want us to close today with a word of prayer. So if you'll join with me, I'm going to pray a prayer written by Henry Nouwen to Jesus. Jesus, we come to you today and we say that your Father's love was so unlimited that he wanted us to know that love, and to find in it the fulfillment of our deepest desires. So he sent us to you with a human heart big enough to hold all human loneliness and all human anguish. Your heart is as wide and deep as divine love itself. Your heart does not distinguish between rich and poor, between friend and enemy, between female and male, between slave and free, or sinner or saint. Your heart is open to receiving anyone with total, unrestricted love. For anyone who wants to come to you, there is room. You want to draw all people to yourself and offer them a home where every human desire is met and every human longing comes to rest and every human need is satisfied. But Jesus, your heart is gentle and humble. You do not force. You do not pull or push. You do not coerce. You want us to come freely to your heart and trust that we will find there the peace and the joy that we most desire. You do not put any requirement on us. You do not expect any great act of generosity. You do not hope for heroic gestures or dramatic signs. The first thing you want is trust. You can only give your heart to those who come to it in trust. Jesus, help us today to give you that trust. Amen. Guys, thank you so much for being here with us today. If any of you would like to pray with anyone, if you need to talk about something and get some prayer, you're welcome to come up to the front. We're going to have members of our prayer team here to meet with you if that's what you'd like. So thank you so much.